texture like sun. Lays me down with my mind, she runs throughout the night. No need to fight, never a frown with golden brown.
Hello comrades and welcome to season 3, episode 3 of Spectre. Today we're taking a look at one of the most famous work-ins in Scottish Labour history, the UCS work-in. On the 29th of July 1971, thousands of workers from the shipyards across the Upper Clyde received confirmation they would lose their jobs. When the workers decided to take matters into their own hands and launch a work-in, they would have no idea the inspiration that they would inspire across the entire Labour movement. Even during the time of the work-in, inspiration was seen through the mass surge of support delivered from the trade unions, the Communist Party, the churches, local authority, shopkeepers, and more. The course of the work-in was perceived to be a foundation for building a victory against rising unemployment and a massive step forward in the fight for securing a new government committed to planning the economy and the development of the shipyards in the interests of the workers of Scotland. To look at the success of the UCS, we have to start from the beginning, 1965 to be precise. The Shipbuilding Inquiry Committee was established to investigate ways in which the shipbuilding industry in Britain could be made competitive, following down from the post-war boom and Korean War. In 66, the committee issued the Geddes Report. Despite showcasing the incompetence of shipyard employers, the Geddes Report failed to propose a programme of public ownership. Instead, it advocated for a programme of capitalist rationalisation. This proposed programme would see the workers of the yards kicked out and sunk into poverty, whilst their employers would be bailed out and saved. The Communist Party of Great Britain called for the complete rejection of the Geddes Report, and called on the then Labour government to reject this report also, recognising the need for the shipbuilding industry to be refounded on the base of public ownership to ensure it could be planned and modernised in the interests of both the workers and the nation. However, the then Labour government did not recognise this. Instead, they unequivocally accepted multiple points of the Geddes report, especially its core principle of capitalist rationalisation. And so, the Shipbuilding Industry Board would be set up to initiate the rationalisation through the grouping of the yards into the main centres of shipbuilding, the Yarrow, Fairfield, Connell, Stephen and John Brown yards. A £5.5 million 3-year interest-free loan was granted. The workforce mounted to 13,000 employees, an order soon amounted to over £87 million. From these developments, a self-proclaimed golden era of the Clyde was announced. Although this fool's gold era began to rust as the UCS plunged into financial difficulties and many shareholders aimed to bail out. In response to this, the chairman of John Brown, Lord Aberconwy, offered his million shares to the then Labour government. This would give them the majority in holdings. How did the then Labour government respond? In spite of seeing the failure of private business, they rejected the offer. The first consortium report of August 1969 showed losses of £10.3 million, £8.4 million of which was attributed to contracts taken over from the parent firms, and the UCS had approached the government for a £12 million loan. Surprise, surprise, management from the orchestration of private enterprise was a failure. Not wanting to recognise this, the employers attempted to smear the workers as those at fault as a result of, quote, bad labour relations, end quote. Following the loan offer, employers also attempted to attack labour conditions in the yards. Despite workers already making concessions on flexibility, mobility, job evaluation, relaxation of safety practices, and more. These concessions showed that it was not the workers at fault, but the employers and management who were once again to blame. The neglect that the UCS faced was not unique in its nature. It was just another example of the neglect that the British shipbuilding industry was facing at the time. The same neglection laid down by the hands of private owners who chose to line their pockets through the use of investing their wartime profits into foreign investment rather than investing into the yards themselves. The Harland and Wolff, Doxford and Sunderland, and Swan Hunter Yards all saw disastrous financial years, and in typical bourgeois fashion, the workers were blamed once again, despite the mounting case of mismanagement and employer negligence which came to light. When the UCS decided to petition for the appointment of a provisional liquidator, a group of four men was established to advise John Davies on the course of action to be taken on the Upper Clyde. This group consisted of Mr. Alexander MacDonald, then chairman of Distillers, Sir Alexander Glenn, a former intelligence officer who later invested in the shipping industry, Mr. David MacDonald, director of Hill Samuel and ex-chairman of the Coal Board, and class traitor Lord Robbins. Even in 2024, the figures on which these men have based their conclusions on have been kept a closely guarded secret. Unsurprisingly, these men did not have the interests of the working people of Scotland at heart. They attempted to pin the blame on the shipyard workers and completely ignoring the efforts made by workers and the cooperation they had shown through the acceptance of concessions. Although the four did eventually admit that the losses on the previously estimated £12 million worth of contracts had been a colossal drain on an already weak working capital. Despite this, the conclusion they reached was, quote, any continuation of Upper Clyde Shipbuilders in its present form would be wholly unjustified and indeed would cause serious and more widespread damage, end quote. And so, the four horsemen of the UCS apocalypse had set forward their calls for the future of the UCS. Scrapping shipbuilding on the Upper Clyde would mean the sacking of more than 8,500 workers. But it wasn't just the actual shipbuilders who'd be affected, also the 20,000 workers involved in the supply of parts, equipment and services to the UCS would also get sacked. This put into question the future of the whole community. The announcement from the government that they would refuse to advance 6 million of working capital to the UCS sent tidal waves throughout Britain. In the words of Jimmy Reid, then chairman of the Clyde Bank Shop Stewards, Communist Party of Great Britain councillor for Clyde Bank and member of the Communist Party of Great Britain's Executive Committee, quote, we should be under no illusions. It means either the total closure or a colossal contraction of the industry. It virtually means the death knell on the upper reaches of the Clyde. The repercussions are as yet incalculable in relation to their effects. The Upper Clyde is being sacrificed on the altar of sheer political dogma. We refuse to accept that somebody sitting in Whitehall is going to kill our industry. End quote. This determined refusal to allow such an important part of Scotland's economy to be sacrificed has been the keynote of all subsequent historic action on the Upper Clyde. The fight to save the shipyards, even before the initial work-in, was solidified through Britain as a result of a broad level of solidarity. The support for the campaign came increasingly from workers of England, Wales and the rest of Scotland. From workshop and workplace collections, messages of support and participation in public meetings and demonstrations organised in Glasgow to keep the yards open. After continued deliberation and backtracking from both government and employers, the UCS occupation commenced on the 30th of July 1971 and the shop stewards seized control. Men, materials and everything else in between, entering or leaving the yards, came under the strict jurisdiction of the shop stewards who took control of the gates. One of the first actions of the fully fledged liquidator, Courtney Smith, was to refuse permission for the press and television to enter the Clyde Bank yard to cover the initial mass meeting. The shop stewards rejected this and invited reporters to attend their meeting anyway. The problem faced by the UCS shop stewards and workers was the devising of a new technique in which the struggle would achieve their objectives, prevent redundancies and closures. A full-blown strike would play into the hands of the employers when they were determined to enact closures anyway. The new form of struggle was evolved by the workers and shop stewards, known today is a work-in. This work-in corresponded directly with the needs of the struggle at the UCS and a tribute to the ingenuity of working class leaders with their feet on the ground. The work-in demonstrated the sheer power of the workers in a dramatic form which raised morale and confidence. Furthermore, it was a form of struggle which provided the workers with a period of time in which to secure the necessary financial and other support from broader and broader sections of the working class. The financial support was crucial. As the struggle proceeded, the workforce had to bear the cost of wages for an increasing number of their workmates made redundant. This also made it crucial to develop solidarity actions aimed at removing the threat of redundancy completely. The work-in was not an attempt to establish workers' control on a permanent basis, but at the same time, it had demonstrated the sense of responsibility, discipline, and latent managerial capacity of the working class. It had driven home in practice the important political lesson that socialism, a society without bosses, is not only feasible but long overdue. As the work-in proceeded, the broad level of solidarity grew. A community was built around the UCS at the time. Bakers, small shop owners, cafes and more. If the yards were to be shut for good, then this whole community would be decimated. In recognising this, locals, shop owners, butchers, bakers, union officials, local authority, churches and civic leaders rallied in support of the UCS and its workers. This is what characterised the campaign to save the yards. Harold Wilson even visited the work-in at Clybank Yard to express the support of the entire labour movement, a movement in which, above all, ordinary working class men and women stepped out onto the stage. Children also. In Aberdeen it was recorded that children held a jumble sale and sent the proceeds to the shipyards. 11 Clybank ewes were photographed by a Swedish television reporter handing over the money they had raised to shipyard shop stewards. The support for the UCS would only continue to grow. The support for the UCS would only continue to grow. After a mass meeting, a special STUC Congress and events, a mass demonstration took place on the 18th of August. 80,000 men, women and children marched through Glasgow. An estimated 200,000 workers downed their tools and industry was brought to a standstill. This was a direct and powerful message sent to the government on the issue of the right to work. The people of Scotland, supported by delegations from London, Wolverhampton, Birmingham, Blackpool, Derby, Barrow and Newcastle, were not prepared to submit to a return to the Hungry 30s. The atmosphere was clearly expressed by the UCS spokesman, Jimmy Reid. The UCS workers began their action, he said, to save their jobs. It did not take long to realise that they were fighting for the whole of Scotland and perhaps Britain. They were fighting for the whole working class and labour movement. The significance of this demonstration would not be lost in the government. The platform on the demonstration was a public manifestation of the unity that had been building right from the start of the UCS campaign. It was also a tribute to the unswerving determination of the shipyard workers and the shop stewards. The speakers included Jimmy Reid, Jimmy Early, Vic Feather, Danny McGarvey, Hugh Scanlon, Alec Murray, Scottish Secretary of the Communist Party, James Jack, General Secretary of the STUC, William Wolfe of the Scottish Nationalist Party, Anthony Wedgwood Benn, and ex-Scottish Secretary Willie Ross. As mentioned, unity had been a growing feature of the UCS campaign. This included the unity that was building internally within the UCS itself. Left militants like Bob Dickey, Bob Cook, Sam Gilmore had worked on the shop stewards committee alongside Jimmy Early, Jimmy Reid and Sam Barr, all active members of the Communist Party's Scottish Committee. And the mutual respect which existed was shown by the election of Jimmy Early as chairman of the Coordinating Committee, Jimmy Reid as chairman of the Clybank Shop Stewards and Sam Barr as convener at Connell's. This same unity was reflected in the Clybank Town Council, mobilising support from the council itself and from other local authorities. Without this unity, the movement could not have developed into the mass campaign involving all sections of the population as we know it to have been. That is why the Communist Party of Britain has always fought for working class unity, for an end to bans and prescriptions imposed by Labour's right wing. How important does such a task stand today with Starmer at the helm of Labour? The crisis at the UCS and other yards across Britain at the time continued to show the state of the industry and the total failure of private enterprise running it. As such, the work-in would continue in the face of numerous challenges until October 1972, when the stewards were satisfied that all arrangements were fully in place and all jobs saved. This was following the late January and early February 1972 U-turn decision from the government to agree to a £35 million relaunch package for all four yards, six times the sum originally proposed. The workers had held out and won, as the yards were to be restructured around two new companies, Govan Shipbuilders, formerly Fairfields, along with Scotson Marine, formerly Connells. Yarrow Shipbuilders had already withdrawn from UCS in April 1970 and regained its status as an independent company. This was the case until 1977, when it was nationalised as part of British Shipbuilders alongside Govan Shipbuilders. The fourth yard, Clyde Bank, formerly John Brown Yard, was sold to Marathon Oil to be repurposed as an oil rig fabrication yard. This would close in 2001. In later years, 1999, the former Yarrow and Fairfields yards were acquired by BAA Systems and became a part of the BAA Systems surface ships. The actions of the workers of the UCS work-in did not just affect those on the Clyde side. They inspired thousands of workers throughout Britain. During the period of the work-in itself, workers from Birmingham, Sheffield, Yorkshire and other regions were inspired to take action in their own workplaces and launch their own occupations and work-ins. The right to work became a calling cry for countless workers across Scotland, England and Wales. To conclude, the UCS work-in draws many lessons from the broad left labour movement to analyse. The success, the failures, the bumps in the road and the what could have beens. To look at the UCS work-in through a black and white lens of trade union organising would be obtuse at best. The success of the work-in came from the countless political actions led by the Communist Party and supporting elements of the UCS work-in. Broad solidarity, that is the key lesson to take away from the UCS. This solidarity forged through the workers in the yards and local communities throughout Scotland, England and Wales. In an era where the governments of Westminster, Holyrood and the Senedd continue to sow further and deeper divisions among the workers, the lessons on solidarity couldn't be more important. A lesson for communists to draw is from the very activity and front-facing involvement that workers and shop stewards took in the very organising of the work-in. Communists should not just be due-paying union members who keep up to date with the developments published through their union. They should be active within the very structures of the union in any capacity they can, being a shop steward, branch secretary, health and safety rep, involved in the youth structure and so on. If it weren't for the involvement of Jimmy Reid, Jimmy Early and Sammy Barr, members of the Communist Party of Great Britain, then the chances of the work-in happening would have been next to none. Although shipbuilding hasn't returned to the heights of its glory days, the work-in has secured shipbuilding in Scotland. The battle now lies with us and within the broader trade union movement. When industrial action looks like it's due to take place, can we build the solidarity between the workers and the wider community? Can we awaken and develop the class consciousness of workers so that they understand the political action that they must take outside of their workplaces? How can we agitate workers to fight for socialism and champion a communist future? It will be no easy battle. The blight of neoliberalism has made the tying of political thought among trade union activity taboo. Many workers are caught in this mindset. Drawing from the success and victories of previous industrial disputes will be vital. Educating workers through the trade union movement on the history of class struggle in Britain is what we desperately need to accomplish. The UCS stands as just one chapter in our history, and it's a chapter that we must champion. Thanks again, comrades, for tuning in to another episode of Spectre. As usual, be sure to leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening in on. And of course, share us with your friends, family, comrades and co-workers. Remember, comrades, together we must build unbreakable links of solidarity, marching together in our millions to make the Clydeside red again.